Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Rain-caused mudslides are affecting roads in the southeastern interior. The Alaska Department of Transportation reports that the McCarthy Road was shut down by a slide last night. DOT Northern Region spokeswoman Caitlin Fry says the slide near Mile 58 is extensive.
About 75 feet long and 8 feet tall. Our maintenance crews got out there last night at about 11 o'clock and worked into the night to get one lane open.
Fry says the McCarthy Road is passable and crews continue to work to clear more of the roadway. Smaller slides and flooding have occurred along the Taylor Highway between milepost 67 and 160, where it has also been raining heavily. Fry cautions drivers to wait until conditions improve before traveling the road. Former State Senator Mike Dunleavy of Wasilla won the Republican governor's primary election yesterday, defeating six other candidates, including former Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell. Dunleavy told Alaska Public Media and KTOO last night that he has appealed beyond his conservative base.
And I think if folks look at my record and the positions I've taken on the PFD, on crime, on trying to develop our resources and get more people back to work, we're getting folks calling us that are Democrats and folks on the left side of the political spectrum.
Dunleavy will face incumbent Governor Bill Walker, who as an independent was not on a primary ballot, Mark Begich, who won the open Democratic primary, and Libertarian candidate Billy Toyin. State Senator Kevin Meyer won the Republican Lieutenant Governor's primary, while Deborah Call ran unopposed on the Democratic side. Independent candidate Elise Galvin soundly defeated Dimitri Shane in the open Democratic primary for U.S. House. Galvin will face Congressman Don Young, who easily won the Republican primary over two challengers. In the Fairbanks area's only contested legislative primary, Bart Laban bested Wolfgang Falk in the Republican State House District 1 race. Laban will face District 1 Democrat Catherine Dodge, who was uncontested in the primary. Incumbent George Rauscher won a three-way Republican race in rural House District 9 over Jim Culver of Hatcher Pass and Delta Junction's Pam Good. Rauscher will face District 9 Democratic candidate Bill Johnson of Delta, who ran unopposed in the primary. District 9 stretches from Delta south to Valdez and west to Palmer. Siemens and a Kinnick Native Corporation have outlined a proposal to sell liquefied natural gas to the Fairbanks North Star Borough's Interior Gas Utility. The proposal to deliver gas by 2020 was heard last night by the IGU board, but as KUAC's Robin reports, the cost of gas to homeowners remains unclear.
The IGU board wanted a little more homework done before considering the unsolicited proposal. This is the third or fourth time in the last year that Siemens has approached and made presentations to the board or individual directors. The company wants to develop gas on land owned by Kinnickotinu Village Corporation, build a liquefaction facility, a very big storage tank, and prepare gas for transport in special cryogenic containers on the Alaska Railroad. Details of the Siemens proposal are on the IGU website, but the actual agreement of who will pay, how much, for what, is still subject to negotiation. Project Director Peter Chorniak explained that borough taxpayers would get gas without having to build anything.
Kinnick Tribe will be the asset owner. Siemens is currently the project developer, working in concert with Kinnick Tribe and Kinnickotinu Incorporated. Siemens has completed the front-end engineering design process. Kinnick Tribe will enter into an LSA with IGU.
That LSA is a liquefaction services agreement. It's like a contract, and it is not yet public. Siemens showed the compensation portion of the LSA to the board members only, who have not released it to the public. In the public paperwork are charts showing how Siemens Kinnick can deliver gas to Fairbanks for $7.72 per 1,000 cubic feet. That's abbreviated as MCF. But the proposal touted economies of scale. If large industrial customers, like the hospital or military base, joins the distribution network, the price of gas goes down for everyone. The charts show scenarios for $6 gas and $5 gas because Siemens Kinnick plans on selling to more than just homeowners in Fairbanks. It compared wellhead prices to flange prices to in-the-tank prices. But directors like Bill Butler and Gary Wilkin wanted a way to compare apples to apples.
We say wellhead cost. We say flange cost. We say city gate cost. We say meter cost. It's just very confusing if I was the public and I heard all these different costs. And I think what the public really cares about is what's at the meter.
I want to know what the price of the family on Badger Road, what it is at their meter. It's really helped me to break down the supply chain into supply, liquefaction, transportation, storage and regas, and distribution. And the cost of those five boxes added up should be the cost of the meter to the family on Badger Road.
The Siemens Kinnick proposal is a long way from being vetted and analyzed by the board, but it looks to some directors as a primary fulfillment of IGU's mission to provide gas to interior Alaska. For others, it's the Plan B, filling in and expanding the distribution system IGU purchased in June. That includes the Pentex natural gas facilities and Fairbanks natural gas trucks that service about 1,100 customers in Fairbanks. Kelly Laurel, the Director for Energy and Infrastructure at Siemens, says they hope IGU can commit to the Siemens Kinnick plan soon.
But we're hoping that mid-September that we can come back and have that sort of discussion, and that by early October you've decided to sign the memorandum of agreement, because then we can move forward to firm up our prices. We can then work with the tribe to solidify their financing. And we're hoping to have a contract in place before the end of the year so that you can have gas before the end of next year.
That timeline sounded too optimistic to some board members who were concerned about getting approval to spend, and yes, that amount is not public yet, on a large 20-year partnership. The board did not act on the presentation and will need more analysis. Its next meeting is Tuesday, September 4th. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
A new study led by a Fairbanks scientist explains why the Arctic could emit more carbon than previously anticipated. Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports.
Through the end of the century, climate models predict that thawing permafrost won't contribute much to global warming. That's because those models only incorporate one type of thaw, where the permafrost warms slowly down from the surface. Until now, the models actually show the Arctic absorbing more carbon than it emits, thanks to plants that are growing faster and sucking greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. Dave Lawrence is a scientist in Colorado who works on a leading climate model.
Plants grow better when there's higher CO2 concentrations, and the warmer seasons, longer growing seasons, have also led to plant carbon uptake.
But there's another type of permafrost thaw happening too, and it's happening much faster. Scientists have known about it for a long time, but it's not included in the models because it's harder to calculate. The thaw comes from a special kind of lake called a thermokarst lake. They form when permafrost starts thawing and the ground sinks down. Then you get a pool of water that helps thaw even more permafrost around and below it. Microbes eat the unfrozen soil and release methane, and because methane is a really powerful greenhouse gas, it turns out that the thermokarst lakes could have a big impact on global warming. Katie Walter Anthony studies thermokarst lakes at University of Alaska Fairbanks.
If we take into account these lakes, we realize, oh, we actually have a significant source of permafrost carbon this century.
Last week, she published a paper with several other scientists. It's the first one to model emissions from thermokarst lakes in relation to the gradual widespread thawing of permafrost. And it says that when you include the lakes, carbon emissions from permafrost in the later part of the century could rise by 100% or more, doubling the current projections. They'd roughly match emissions from land use changes like clearing and burning of forests. That's the second largest human source of greenhouse gas pollution, after fossil fuels. Lawrence, the Colorado scientist, says the results will likely lead to a bigger effort to incorporate thermokarst lakes into global climate models.
When it's a big number like 100%, then it provides the motivation to do that work.
In the meantime, scientists say that the study's results point to the limitations and uncertainties involved with all global climate models. Walter Anthony's study is published in the journal Nature Communications. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
And I'm Dan Bross.